the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark, where we learn to accept living in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We share information about the facts of radiation and the nuclear industry. We discuss vital current events and explore the roots of social engineering that has caused so many of our beloved friends and family to intentionally ignore the most critical, catastrophic event in human history. We interview activists who do the hard work to discover the truth and get the word out. We dispose the NRC's daily nuclear alerts and take phone calls from our listeners in an effort to fully engage on all topics that are changing our world. We explore exactly how radiation affects our bodies and minds to dissipate your fears and face the truth. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear. We share information on how to take your life back from the systems intent on enslaving our bodies, minds, and souls. The Age of Vision radio show will create a venue that all will choose in order to actively engage to save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Good morning, UCY radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark. It is Wednesday, September 2nd. And as you know, on Wednesdays is the day that I do interviews. And today we will be speaking with Mimi Gurman. And she is with radcast.org. And she has a Facebook page called No Nukes Northwest on Facebook, which is a closed group. But if you're interested, you can request to be a member of the group and start participating. Before we get to our interview, I do want to share with you a little poem. You know, I like to read these poems from Lao Tzu, and I thought that this would be a little bit telling because this is where we're at right now with our world, and this is why Mimi stays actively engaged in civil rights and anti-nuclear issues. This is why I'm here 3 days a week. So this is number 76. It says, "Man, born tender and yielding, stiffens and hardens in death. All living growth is pliant until death transfixes it. Thus men who have hardened are kin of death, and men who stay gentle are kin of life. Thus the hard-hearted army is doomed to lose. A tree hard-fleshed is cut down. Down goes the tough and big, up comes the tender sprig." So I thought I would share that with you because that is where we're at. We are dealing with a hard-hearted army of really corporate fascists who have shockingly invaded our culture, and we are now becoming aware of what that really means in our lives when we face this nuclear catastrophe that really brought it to fore when Fukushima happened. So, Miriam, are you here with us?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time with us. And again, let me introduce you a little bit better. You have worked with people to put together radcast.org, and people can get in touch with you, as I'm sure they will want to by the end of this interview, at info@radcast.org.
Right.
Or connect with you on No Nukes Northwest, and that's NW, right? They don't spell out the whole word, no, NW.
Right, right. It's NW.
Right, No Nukes Northwest on Facebook. And so I really want to thank you. Now, look, the reason I asked you to be interviewed is you wrote a really quick little blurb on Facebook that said, "What's it going to take for people to close the Columbia Generating Station down? Why? Where are all the Portlanders?" I live in Eugene, and I went, you're probably right. I mean, like, really seriously, I'd known about this when Helen Caldicott came. I could kick myself. She was up there, and I'm sure you were part of that, putting that together. But I did not go because it happened to be on a tax day where I had to do tax returns for people, and I help people with tax problems. So I did not go and did not make it a priority. I wish I had. I knew back then that it was a very compelling and dangerous situation. Chuck Johnson recently came to Eugene and did a presentation about the real and present dangers of the Columbia Generating Station. Chuck Johnson is with Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. And then about a week and a half later, you made that comment. So I decided, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, you're absolutely right. We are waiting for an earthquake to happen. We're waiting to create another Fukushima right in our own back door if we don't do anything about this.
Yeah, all of that is what is going on. We know that we're going to get hit with a really big earthquake. It's going to be a 9 or more, so every single geologist tells us from the U.S. geological team, both at University of Washington and elsewhere. And we know that CGS sits on 12 fault lines, and that's a lot of fault lines. And we also know that if that earthquake comes in and hits towards the Cascades, that will go right up into the Hanford region and create major, major damage. Yeah, it'll be, you know, like it'll be an apocalypse.
So if there's an earthquake, let me wrap my mind around what you just said. So you're telling me that these scientists have said, A, there are 12 fault lines?
Yeah, there's been a new seismic study over in the Hanford Reserve by the Department of Geological Surveys at University of Washington, and that was done 2 years ago. And they detected additional fault lines to those that they found previously, and CGS sits on them. So does Hanford. And the relativity between CGS and Hanford is crucial in understanding the enormity of the problem. And the enormity of the problem is this. If, or when, I should say, that earthquake comes and it affects Hanford, we have 177 tanks that are already leaking. They're fragile. They're so fragile that they are leaking. And the fragility comes from two different things. One is the heat from the goop that's inside those tanks. And I say goop for another reason, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But those tanks are built very shoddily. So they don't have a lot of oomph behind the metallurgy in them. So we've got leaks. We've got leaks in the double shell tanks at Hanford. We're talking hundreds of millions of gallons of nuclear waste and other waste that we don't even know what it is.
Chemical waste or
all
industrial waste that they just bring there?
Exactly. They don't do it anymore, but that's what's there. That's what's in those tanks from before when there was no oversight in what was coming in. So people could come in, industries would come in and dump incredibly toxic glues and paint, you know, chemicals and you name it, you know, oils, all kinds of things, as well as nuclear waste. And they put it all together in all different tanks, not notating what was in each tank. So there is no clarity for what the chemical makeup is in any of those 177 leaking tanks. Right, but there are.
The Department of Energy knows this information.
Yeah, this is known information. This is on the Hanford site. You can read about this on the Hanford site. It's public knowledge now, and they didn't think they were doing anything wrong at the time. They probably still don't think they're doing anything wrong, but it's a real pain in the ass for them because now they are tasked with fixing it. And as we know through primarily Walt Tamositis, who has taught many of us about the potential devastation of moving the waste out of these tanks to clean it up in the faulty pretreatment design at the vitrification plant at Hanford. We can't move that waste. You can't move waste when you don't know what the chemical compounds are in that waste, but you do know that there is nuclear waste involved due to the potentiality of a hydrogen explosion, a hydrogen bubble. And these things have to be mixed in a very specific way in order for hydrogen bubbles to not form. And when you don't know what it is you're mixing, you can't know how to do the chemistry and the physics to move this particular goop from a tank through smaller tubes into what was the pretreatment plant, which can't be built due to the poor design, which is all now public information, thanks to Walt Tamositis for becoming a whistleblower.
So you're saying that the remediation cannot be built the way
yes.
it's remediated, cannot
yes.
be built?
That's what I'm saying. That is what.
So the option is what at Hanford?
The option at Hanford, they are working at cleaning up specific sites, and they've done some of that. But due to the, again, the enormity and the mass of nuclear waste at Hanford, the largest job cannot be completed, and that is the waste tanks. So the only way to deal with the waste tanks at this point is in the immediate present time is to build more tanks that are better built than the double shell tanks, which were supposed to last for 20 years and leaked before that. So even the double shell tanks were, which were the remediation plan, plan B didn't work. Plan B failed. Plan A was, you know, getting the vitrification plant built so that we could separate low radioactive waste from high level radioactive waste, and that would be vitrified. And we can't separate it now because the design flaws were so extreme that this is just has been a waste of billions of dollars. So aside from getting on an immediate level new tanks built and put in the ground, which Hanford doesn't want to do, the next plan is we need a whole new design that actually in the design is not flawed. And the thing about the design,
I don't think that's asking too much, excuse me, but that's kind of funny. We need a design that is not flawed. I think that should have been the first call to order. Seriously.
Yeah, but nobody, this comes back to a zero oversight level. There's no oversight at Hanford whatsoever. And there's also no oversight at CGS, which is only 10 miles from Hanford on the same fault lines. So that brings the whole picture together. You have nuclear waste that can't be moved out of 177 leaky tanks. And you have 10 miles down the road there, a nuclear power plant, which is called Whoops 2, though the also known as name is Columbia Generating Station. And they renamed it so that people would no longer be aware that Whoops 2 is still in existence. And the reason that the PR campaign came in to rename Whoops 2 to the Columbia Generating Station is to make more innocuous the pending catastrophe, looming catastrophe that we have on our hands here in Cascadia. Wow. So if we dumb down the name, people will maybe forget that Whoops 2 and the fiasco that created Whoops 2 with the potentiality of creating, like, I can't remember how many altogether it was supposed to be, 6 or 7 nuclear power plants, something like that. Only Whoops 2 made it out of all of that. And that was the largest bond default in the history of the United States. And out of that came one nuclear power plant.
Wait a minute. Okay, so do you mind if I take you back a little bit here?
No, go ahead.
This is really a lot of information for people to chew. So what is, could you tell us what the acronym WHOOPS stands for? Because that's it. I mean, who would name a nuclear power site WHOOPS? But what does that acronym mean?
Oh, I gotta look it up again because I can't even remember. WPPS2.
Oh, that's what it's called, WPPS.
Yeah.
It's called Whoops. Uh-huh. I get it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like Washington Power Plant or something.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess.
There should be a quick way to get this definition. WPPS, nuke plant. Let's see what it says here because
That's all right. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. But okay, so Lynn, let's not. I don't want to get
here. Yeah. It's the Washington Public Power Supply System.
Right. Doesn't that sound sweet?
Right.
And so you're telling me that they, what made them put it only 10 or 15 miles away from Hanford? Why?
It's 10 miles. And it was because It was a whole nuclear facility. Hanford was a nuclear facility. Hanford was created to create plutonium. And the only way to get plutonium was to process it in a certain way through nuclear power to generate the waste and then deal with that. So, you know, it made sense that they would just keep this one area, this very secretive area, that area. And it was no longer secretive once the bomb dropped, because once the bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki dropped, then everybody in the Hanford region was able to, and I'm not kidding, was able to celebrate the deaths that the nuclear bomb created. And they not only celebrated this, they still celebrate this, you know.
Still celebrate it.
The whole area around Hanford and the Columbia Generating Station is a pro-nuclear area. Everybody there is paid through Hanford or the Columbia Generating Station. It's an incredibly wealthy area. The people are paid very well, and they're paid well because they're all dying of cancer. But that's a whole other story. These people are willing to do that, and it's their own choice. Nobody's making them stay there and work on these things. They think that nuclear power is safe. And it's the Tri-Cities. That's what the area is known as in Washington. It's three different towns that are centrally located, all created to work at Hanford back in the 40s and, you know, really 30s, 40s, 50s into today with the Columbia Generating Station and all the work that's being done at Hanford. So I don't even know where I was going with this, but they celebrate the atomic bomb, and the Richland High School football team is the mascot, is their name is the Bombers. They have a local businesses, Atomic Bowling. They have Atomic Foods. They have Atomic Lawn Care. They have Atomic Pizza. This is a celebrated sick community.
What about those babies last year? There was like 32 babies in 2013, I think it was, that had encephaly, and right around there, and people were very concerned. The government came out within a few months and said, no, it's not caused by Hanford, but it's really the only thing that could have been the answer. Do those people actually hook, line, and sinker buy everything the government tells them about this?
Yes, and definitively, yes. And the other thing is, as far as that encephaly was concerned, I called the Washington Department of Health to ask them how they were not taught. There were two different reports on the same thing. The first report went like unnoticed, and that's when I noticed it right away. And it took about six more months before that report came back out again, and people were like, wait a minute, what is this? So the first round, I called the Washington Department of Health and spoke to the woman who was running that study, and I asked her, how are you not mentioning Hanford and the water supply and the Columbia River and irrigation and etc.? And she said, well, why would we think that? I said, are you kidding? Did you know, I couldn't believe that she was saying this to me. Why would we think that? And I said, what exactly do you think, and how did you come to this these findings that completely leave out Hanford? They don't even say this was not caused by Hanford. Right. They just left it out of the whole thing. So I said, right, how did you come up with your findings that you don't know why these are happening? Because that's what the findings were.
Right.
Said, well, we really believe that the women, the mothers who had these babies, didn't have enough folic acid. I said, so you're blaming this on lack of folic acid. And I said, how did you get there? And she said to me, well, we know that they weren't taking nutritive vitamins when they were pregnant. And I said, how do you know that? I said, did you talk with them? And she said, no. And I said, so how do you know that? She said, well, it's in their medical records. I said, so you had access to their medical records? And she said, well, not really. I'm sorry, my partner's phone is going to go off. I'm going to go in another room with you. So anyway, facts coming in. Sorry, folks.
Right. That's all right.
So anyway, she said, what we found in the medical records is that there's no mention that they were taking folic acid. I said, so you made an inference on what wasn't there.
Wow.
And you didn't look up the Columbia Generating Station or Hanford. And she said, what is the Columbia Generating Station?
Wow.
And I said, you run this department? And she said, yeah. She's no longer there.
Wow.
I said, it's the nuclear power plant. it leaks. It's one of the, it's the top seven. It's in the top seven for being the worst in the country for its leaking, for its emissions. And she said, well, that has nothing to do with this. We know it has to do with the fact that these women were poor. And I said, wow, wow. So you're going to blame these women for having babies who were malformed, you know, due to a lack of folic acid, which you don't know for certain because you didn't speak to them. And it just didn't say in their file that they had that. And yet they were going to doctors because they had medical records. And I said, do you hear yourself? I was appalled, man. I was really, really
That is actually shocking. But, you know, that is really the 90% rule in force, Mimi. I'm going to tell you what. Every government agency has gotten the memo. They all stick to it. Every news media, every agency, it's run by the military. The 90% rule, deny radiation causes any harm, underreport the negative effects by radiation by 90%. And they stick to it. It's 100%.
Well, so that's the answer to that, you know, that whole issue there is on their end, the Washington Department of Health's response is they won't even talk about Hanford or CGS as being partly responsible, as being even something to look at because it can't have happened. And the other part of that is that she said, the winds don't blow this way. See, all of these babies' deformities happened in Yakima,
yeah.
Which is just, and I mean, it's just west of Hanford and CGS. It's not far.
Right.
But apparently that would mean that the winds were blowing that way, and we don't normally get east winds coming towards the west. They're more common is that they would come from the ocean and go the other way and blow east. So I said, so you're saying that the winds only blow in one direction? And that I found out later when I spoke to more people at the university, at the Washington Department of Health, is their line,
right,
that these people are not downwinders because the wind only blows one way.
Wow.
It, really.
It is shocking. Now, I would like you to go back a little bit and talk to us. I'd like to. So you're telling me that the not only Hanford is leaking, but the Columbia Generating Station is leaking. It's listed as the one of the top seven worst in the country.
Yeah.
And what is the Department of Energy doing about the leaks? Like, what are they, like, that doesn't even bear, that does not show up on any of the nuclear alerts I've been reading that there's leaks going on, just like there's none that tell us about what's going on in Indian Point, the leaks there, the tritium.
Yeah, the DOE doesn't care. Their job isn't to care. Their job is to just move money around, get money, and move the money. And they have no function, no real function that is an actual reality. You know, they're tasked to have a function, but they don't do what they're tasked to do, which is to ensure that anything to do with energy is working properly, meaning the NRC is, you know, they're the oversight to the NRC, which is the oversight to the nuke plants. That we know that there is no oversight. Oversight is a blanket over our minds, you know, given to us by the government to make us feel good. And it does. It makes so many people, it makes billions of people feel good. Billions of people feel good.
Wow.
And there's a handful of us who know better, and we cannot break that blanket. We can't shred it because nobody thinks that we, who are citizens paying attention, know what's going on. CGS just had numerous leaks during their refueling. We know that refueling, any time that there's a nuclear power plant, this is just for refueling. This isn't just on any given day. We know that when a plant goes down for any reason, whether it's a scram, which is really bad, you know, something has really malfunctioned at the nuclear power plant and it has to shut down or down power, that releases radiation. And when it starts up again, it always releases radiation. These are facts that are out there by the government.
Right.
And there are reports on these facts that anybody can access. And I'll get you that link in a little bit. So during this time that, let's see, it was from May through the beginning of August, really, or the end of July, that CGS was down for refueling, we did a study on how many, every time there was an event notification in the NRC for CGS, did that event that occurred actually, was it a cover for a radiation leak? And we looked at the NRC pages and we looked at the EPA pages. The EPA pages give us the graphs of radiation. And what we found was every single time there was an event that was, you know, made to be, that was put out by the NRC from CGS, there was a radiation rise.
Wow.
And it's too, there were too many of them for this to have been a coincidence. So I have a hypothesis. It's loose. It's pretty loose. And that is that what we know, first of all, is that if a nuclear power plant has a problem and it doesn't tell the NRC about the problem, it can be fined hundreds of thousands of dollars. If they tell the NRC about the problem, no matter how slight the problem or how great the problem, the NRC won't do anything about it except say, okay, and that's all they do. Again, there's no oversight.
Right.
So they've been told, and then the NRC puts it out, and that's their job, and that's what these people get paid to do. And that's it. That's the end of the line for what they get paid to do, because they don't do anything else.
Yeah, so, that's obvious. If you read the nuclear alerts on a regular basis, to be honest, the gross negligence exercised by the NRC is just astounding. I honestly had no idea. I only recently started reading them, and to be frank, it is grotesque. There isn't a single person who earns money who has this level of gross negligence written into their job description.
Right. So what I am now thinking is that there's an issue at a nuclear power plant. The nuclear power plant does describe the issue. It doesn't say the rest of it. It doesn't say, well, what we know or don't know as far as a radiation leak. They just leave that. They omit that. And then they just give the event report to the NRC, and then everything's fine. There's no fine for them, you know.
The NRC has their standard, no harm to human health.
Right. And they also don't make the nuclear power plant fix this in a timely manner or shut down because of it, which is often the case of what would be, you know, the remedy. Let's say that you have a gash in your arm. You can't put a Band-Aid on the gash because you're going to bleed out. That's how nuclear power plants are with these events, often.
Yeah.
But what the NRC does, it says, okay, thanks for letting us know. Here's a Band-Aid. And the Columbia Generating Station or the nuclear power plant that, you know, has reported the event just says, thanks. Thanks for the Band-Aid. And they just keep going because they don't see the radiation that's leaking or the potentiality of a meltdown from the event that they've reported as a problem, because they don't see it as affecting them as a worker. They don't see it as affecting the community. And they don't see any of that altogether because they have to believe that the blanket of bullshit that was put on them by the government is real.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is an interesting setup at the Columbia Generating Station. How many stakeholders are involved? That actually really stunned me. There are many, many, many people that need to agree to shut this thing down. Isn't that correct?
There's like, I think it's like a total of like 78 or something like that.
This is my question. Usually when you have a conglomerate of lots of masses like that, there has to be five or six pivotal people, you know, because the herd will go the way the leaders go, right? So who are the leaders of them? How can we out here in the real world, those of us in the Northwest that want to actively engage, what would you suggest is the best way to take action to start getting these people to take a look at this issue, that it's leaking nonstop and it is a dangerous situation, especially since it's not like it's sitting all by itself. I think it's compounded by the fact that it is sitting right next to Hanford. I mean, forget the idea that it's on, you know, it's on, we cannot forget the idea that it's on these earthquake faults and less than 20 miles, I mean, it's 10 miles away.
Right. Well, the other thing is that the entire design of the Columbia Generating Station, this is important to understand, it's a GE boiling water reactor, Mark II. Fukushima's plants were a Mark I, and the only difference in the design is that, like, It's the exact same design as a Mark I, except that, let's just say, water pipes were put on the east corner of a room rather than the west corner of a room. That's the only thing that differentiates, you know, these designs. So there's a lack of containment for the fuel pool. There's, you know, all kinds of major disasters in the build of these designs. And the frailty due to neutron bombardment, which happens the moment you flip on a switch at a nuclear power plant from, you know, it just, everything is getting corroded from the moment. Everything meaning wires, cables, concrete, you name it. Anything that exists in hard form is being corroded by neutron bombardment from the moment a nuclear power plant gets turned on. So it's a Mark II reactor. It's sitting on these 12 fault lines. And it has nuclear waste on site, and Hanford is right next door. The first problem, in order to try to get help with this, is to have people understand that there's a nuclear power plant in Washington State. And it sounds kind of weird for me to say that, but the reality is, back to the beginning of this interview, people knew what Whoops 2 was. And then they believe that Whoops 2 went away because nobody talks about Whoops 2 anymore. And I know this as a fact because I've interviewed many, many, many people on the streets in Washington and Oregon. And I said, do you know that there's a nuclear power plant in the state of Washington? Well, that's Hanford. No, it's not Hanford. Hanford's the nuclear dump. There's an actual working nuclear online nuclear power plant. And they said, no, we didn't know that. We thought Whoops 2 was down. So if you're going to try to fix something, you got to have people understand it exists in the first place, the thing that you want fixed. And so that's step one. So the first thing to do is tell everybody you know in Washington that there is a nuclear power plant. It's not Hanford. It's called the Columbia Generating Station, which is Whoops 2. The second thing you can do is most of the owners of the power plant are the public utility districts, meaning the people in Washington, many, many people in Washington actually own CGS, but they don't know it because they don't know that CGS exists. And sorry for the redundancy, but all of this keeps you have to keep saying these things so that you understand the power of the blanket that the government has given the people.
Right.
So, so if you go to the people and tell them that your public utility district has the power to pull their one vote out of the conglomeration of votes for CGS, that would be major. Now, you got to remember, the public utility districts really enjoy the money. They all think that nuclear power is clean. So it's a big haul to, first of all, get people to call the PUDs that they belong to and tell them, we want you to pull your vote from CGS, get out of nuclear power, move into doing what the Clark County PUD just did, which wasn't remove their vote yet. We're working on them. But what they did do was they just built a solar array in Vancouver, which is part of the Clark County PUD, which is just across the river from Portland. It's, you know, it's 5 minutes from my house, really. And to have the forethought and foresight in building a solar array also means that you know that solar is a good way to invest your money, as is wind, right? So now we're trying to convince the head of the PUD in Clark County to put the head of it, the chair, to pull his vote, to just say, hey, you know what? We don't need this nuclear power. It's such a minimal amount of electricity coming from CGS that we use in Washington. Let's be smart about this and pull our one vote. And if all of the PUDs start to do this, then we will get somewhere. The only other way to stop CGS from existing is a meltdown at CGS. And that's going to happen. And the other reason I say it's going to happen, aside from the fact that it's like the seventh worst in the United States, if not more than that as far as its emissions go, but is that the cooling system is attached to the Columbia River. We just had 250,000 sockeye salmon die this summer due to the waters heating up in the Columbia River. So we know factually that our river is hotter than it ever was. So what I'm trying to do right now is get a definitive answer from our experts, nuclear experts, on how hot does the river need to be, or how warm does the river need to be before it can no longer be used as a cooling system for the Columbia Generating Station? The answer that I received so far isn't a numerical, it's not a temperature answer, but the answer was, if the waters get too warm, what will happen with CGS is it will power down to 35%. At that point, that's so low that CGS would have to shut down anyway because they wouldn't be able to afford itself, you know, due to the lack of energy that it's electricity that it's putting out. So my fear of meltdowns due to warming, I still believe are something to be heeded. And I can't believe that the end of the answer is, oh, well, they'll just power down. I do believe that the warmer the Columbia gets, the more likely a meltdown will be at the Columbia Generating Station, because it's the only thing that makes sense.
Because the water is too hot that they're cooling.
It's too hot. And we know from the event pages at the NRC, from Columbia Generating Station, that all of the backup units, everyone, the water backup, the valves, the shutoffs, the monitoring systems, they have all failed so incredibly over just the last few months. So if they needed, let's say there was something that happened at CGS, something terrible that happened at CGS, worse than it already is with radiation leaks, and they needed more water to get in to refill, let's say, the pool. Those valves have not worked. The valves where the doors have to get, you know, opened up so that water can come in. All kinds of things like this in the backup systems do not work.
Oh, my God. And they know this.
And they know this. These are in the events. And
have they corrected any of these things?
Do you these know? Are public event notifications.
Yeah, but I mean, have they corrected these?
No, they don't correct them. They can't. They put in a valve. It's a huge one-ton valve. They put this valve in. It's part of a backup system. They put the valve in decades ago, backwards and upside down. They just discovered that.
Was that Bechtel?
Well, they're all the same, whether it's Bechtel or DuPont from the old days. I mean, you know, it's really, they're all the same thing. None of them do their job, so it doesn't really matter what their name is. Their names are at this point, superfluous. If they're an oversight or contractor, they're not doing their jobs.
So you're telling me also at the Columbia Generating Station, they put it on backwards.
Mm-hmm.
San Onofre, they also put it on backwards in 1972. They had to turn it around. It took them an extra year to turn the thing around. The gross incompetence on that, like, that's not an accident. You don't take a one-ton piece of equipment and put it on accidentally backwards. Somebody along the road has to notice it. That's not an accident.
Right. So
two places is definitely not an accident.
Well, and that's just one thing. The monitors go down like every other week. There's monitoring stacks. Those go down. Why do they go down? Why do they not care? Why is the response that I get when I call the NRC person over there, and say, look, every other week these monitors are going down. Yeah, but it's not really a big deal because we have three. I said, you have three monitors to monitor low, medium, and high radiation. And you have three monitors because you need three monitors. So if every other week one of these monitors is going down, that means that you aren't catching that particular kind of radiation. Oh, no, the other ones will catch it. So it's really okay. So why did they build three in the first place? And there's no answer to that, you know? So anyway, the list of event notifications at CGS is very long, and we have a spreadsheet of the list.
Wow.
For the last few years.
CGS.org, is that where it's at?
I need to actually post that. I can't figure out on a WordPress site how to post a spreadsheet.
I can help you figure that out.
Oh, good. That would be great because I have the spreadsheet. I just don't know how to make a post out of it.
Yeah.
And I really want people to see this. And in that spreadsheet, there's also a list of all of the times that they've been inspected, and that CGS has been inspected, and they have found managers running the Columbia Generating Station drunk or on drugs.
Right. I've seen that many times on these alerts.
Yeah, so we have that on spreadsheets too. So, you know, we've got a nuclear power station that is on more than one occasion, on many occasions. And that's just when, you know, there's a surprise inspection run by drunks. And I don't mean to sound like an asshole when I say that, but I don't want people who are fucked up running our nuclear power plants. And I get the stress. You know, I get that you'd be stressed out, but if you can't handle it, get the hell out, you know?
Well, they're being paid by an industry. I mean, if you went to work every day and nothing you did mattered, you had no accountability.
Which is how it is.
You know, and you knew that really you were ignoring real science and continuing to get rich. You'd have to self-medicate to just be there. Honestly, I don't know how anybody can adjust in their heart of hearts and buy that. There is so much astounding information about the nuclear industry causing direct harm to human life and to life on our planet. Like John Goffman, Arthur Tamplin, Linus Pauling, they had foundational information that frankly has not changed. The science, Dr. Gilmedi has been testing beagles for the last 30 years in New Mexico to try to find the lowest amount of radiation that cannot harm a beagle. And guess what? 30 years, he's still killing beagles. They all die still. So it is unequivocal. And so for people to just ignore, the interesting thing that I find, Mimi, is that when we talk to people about nuclear energy, they very rarely talk about the human cost or the cost to life. And frankly, you know, myself, I never realized how dangerous it was myself until Fukushima happened. Well, after Fukushima happened, I bought the propaganda. And I had a nightmare on May 5th, 2012. I thought Hanford was on fire. And when I went to the internet and I discovered Fukushima was out of control, that's when I started taking interest. It wasn't when Dr. Helen Caldicott was here at CGS, which I sincerely regret not going to now, because I think if I had gone that day, it probably would have changed my life. I could have really grasped the complete date. Frankly, I feel like every day we're in danger in the Northwest. I have this fire under my butt about this right now. Like when you posted that Facebook page, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, you know, like how is it that I, who have been actively engaged with the Post-Ignorance Project, have just like shuffled that information away in the back of my head so I could get busy with this other idea? Like, it's almost like I tell people, you know, Fukushima changed our entire world history. There, nothing has ever happened. It's still ongoing. People do not really recognize Fukushima is still an ongoing catastrophe that is far worse now, 4 years later, than it was when it started on 3/11/11. Well, I think that the Columbia Generating Station holds that same potential to be even more catastrophic.
Well, you know, in the year 2011, there were about 210 earthquakes in the Hanford area. And the strongest measured a 3.0, which is small. Wow. But the fact that there are so many in the area means, and I've talked with some of the scientists over at University of Washington about this, the more earthquakes you get, the worse the earthquakes will become. Right. Because it's fracturing that area and it's making it more sensitive to the next earthquake. And so, you know, this is a reality. And the other reality is that CGS requires an awful amount of water from the Columbia River to cool it. And the more water that it takes and the hot water that it might put back in, or the lack of water that it might put back in, right? It also creates an imbalance in the waters of the river, which it is using as its cooling source.
Well, so let me stop you there, because I don't want to forget this. Is it true that the Columbia River is actually got contaminants, nuclear contaminants in the river?
Oh, yeah.
What are those contaminants that they have found?
Do you really want to know?
Yes.
Uranium, cesium, strontium, plutonium, and, you know, hundreds of other radionuclides that you always get if you have uranium, cesium, strontium, and plutonium.
Wow.
There's a whole long list, and they're all in the river. and they've been in the river
for decades. Do you think that the fish in that river are dangerous to eat? Would you eat fish from the river?
I do eat fish from the river. I don't eat lots of them. You know, any fish at this point, if you eat fish, you are risking your reality. You're risking your life. And we try to test the fish in the river, and we need to do more testing of the fish in the river. We just had five or more very large fish. I'm spacing out their name right now. What's the huge fish? The bottom dwellers. They're huge. They live like 100 years.
Oh, my God. I don't know. I'm not a fisherman. Tim.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, folks.
Carp? Is it a carp?
No. I'm sorry. I'm spacing that out. But they just died in the river. And what one of our labs, one of the larger labs that is helpful to all of us in discovery, is trying to do is get those fish sent to them so that they can test for strontium, because they're bottom dwellers. And the issue is that those fish have not been sent. And I told Marco from the lab that this is common practice for Washington Department of Health to tell you they're going to do something and not follow through on it. And the Washington Department of Health is responsible for testing the fish in the river. And according to the Washington Department of Health, they have tested the fish in the river from 2010, 2013, 2014, and I'm sure 2015. And they have those results, and they will not release them.
What? They're not released?
They will not release them. They'll tell you that they are going to release them, but they have not. I've been working on this for 2.5 years to get them to release their results, and they will not.
What do they say when they tell you they will not do that?
Oh, it's still in the lab. And this is more bullshit from, you know, the powers that be. This is all part of the blanket. Just tell the people that you're doing your job, but don't give them the results from what you say you're doing. And it's very frustrating.
Don't these people realize, though, that they are endangering the lives of every human being in the region and in our country?
They don't care. They really don't care. And I don't know what kind of disease it is when people don't care that they're contributing to the death of millions of people and to rivers and to oceans and to all life. I don't know what that disease is called, but whatever that disease is called, there are millions of people in the nuclear industry who have that disease. And I'm sure it's a disease. But I'm not a doctor. I can't name it. But as a citizen who has done my best at trying to get answers and am up against this kind of diseased response, yeah, every single time I go to it, it's a real thing. The DOE has it. The President of the United States has it. All the President's men have it. The NRC has it. Any idiot who's going to work in a nuclear power plant certainly has it. The idiots who live in the villages around nuclear power plants, they're diseased, you know. I don't know what this is called, but it is something that is a massive problem to the rest of us.
Well, I consider them to be the products and results of social engineering. I mean, we were sold by Walt Disney the friendly atom, and that is a very deep social engineering program to get people to just like, don't look, as long as you're comfortable, as long as you're happy, trust us, we're going to make sure that you're all right, and don't worry about what other people are saying. It's that whole denial. Like when in my science class, there was a young woman who was born with a hole in her heart. She was born and lived near Hanford, less than 50 miles away. And I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, she was like 27. I said, well, you know, I had just finished reading Dr. Goffman's book, and he was saying that in utero, exposure to radiation causes holes in the heart of infants as they're developing in utero. And so many children are born with a little small, it's repairable now. In those days in the 50s, it wasn't like it is now. So she was born in, I think she told me, 82 or something. And her hole, though, they fixed her heart, patched her back up, and she had this big slice down her chest. That's how I asked, how'd you get, you know, the scar? She said something, oh, I had a... She mentioned to me about her scar because she's getting married. And she's like, well, I had surgery when I was an infant. And I was like, didn't you know that that's caused by radiation? She's like, no, my doctor never told us that. No one ever mentioned radiation. We grew up around there and no one ever talked about it.
By the way, not to change the subject, but it's sturgeon. I finally figured out the name of that huge fish that has been dying in the Columbia.
And so they said they would send it to the lab, and they have not done that.
Right. And I wrote to Marco, and I said, this really is the behavior of the Washington Department of Health, and we all need Marco's lab to get that sturgeon.
Well, what if you were just to get a sturgeon? Have you had any fish? Have you done?
We might be able to do that. We'll have to work something out with some of the native tribes to do that and get that sturgeon. I personally am bummed out that the Washington Department of Health isn't doing it, because these sturgeon are already dead. Right. And you don't want to just catch a sturgeon to, you know, kill a sturgeon.
Yeah.
Live, you know, over 100 years to get samples. You know, I mean, I don't want to do that.
Well, I wonder
if five sturgeon die, and they could have sent, you know, a major chunk, bones and all, of the sturgeon to get lab work done. But instead, they're going to obfuscate again.
That's what they do. That is exactly what they do. That's their standard procedure. I mean, I think I told you about that lady that I met here in town. She told me she worked for the Department of Wildlife up in Washington. And she said, I asked her about Fukushima. She said, we know. She said, frankly, we saw two-headed fish. We saw two-headed deer. We saw two-headed snakes.
It's so true.
She said, they know everything. They're just not talking. She said, and in fact, if anybody that works up there, even in the Department of Wildlife, says anything at all, they are terminated, period.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have a zero tolerance. You cannot talk about it at all. That is like unconscionable to me, that we have people going to work every day agreeing to be colluded, essentially. They're being coerced into denying that this stuff is causing catastrophic harm to our planet for money. They do it voluntarily.
I'm telling you, it is a real sickness, you know? I mean, and I don't say this lightly. It is a real sickness, and it's a mental illness that humans have somehow, you know, I don't know, it's been the changes to our DNA. I have no idea what caused this. But what I know is that a sane, healthy human being could not do anything like any of these people are doing, killing our waters, our earth that we live on. People who have their own children, who don't even care, who can't create a space in their brain to understand that what they're doing is killing their own children. That's what I mean. This is a sickness. They can't see that. And if you can't get that, there's something severely wrong with you. And the rest of us, I believe, are mandated to at least get the information, extract the information that, if it's at all possible, that we can get, so that we are aware of what is going on. But then, you know, it comes back to, you know, rapid climate change, right? Like, here we are, and we're at the end game here.
Right. Well, so that's the beginning of the unraveling.
And so we don't have the time and none of the things that are happening out there are things that we're going to be able to fix as far as reversing what has already begun a long time ago with our climate. And so for me, what I want to do with CGS is I want to see it shut down so that when we heat up even more than we were in the summer of 2015 and the fires that are, you know, still raging in Cascadia, so that those things, when they get again, because it's happened before, onto the Hanford Reservation and at the Columbia Generating Station, if these things could be, Hanford can't get shut off. It's not a shut off situation. But if we could get the waste into a little bit of a safer kind of space for them, better tanks, something like that for the time being while the ship goes down, it would help. It would help that, like, I would know that I wasn't going to be radiated to death. I just, you know, the thought of, like, if I have an option, I don't know. Maybe I'd rather suffer through not drinking water, not having water, than just having my skin peel off. You know what I mean? I mean, like, I think about these things. How do I want to die? It's coming. And if we don't talk about that, well, sure, add another blanket to, your list of things that the government's already given you to hide your head in. But for me, I don't have that blanket. So I don't want my skin falling off, and I don't want my hair falling out. I want
How long do you, now let me ask you a question about this the shutdown. Like, if we could get our best case scenario, close the Columbia Generating Station, then move Hanford into being a safer place, how long does that project take? That's not going to be an immediate thing that happens.
It can take 100 years to fully decommission a nuclear power plant. But the first thing that has to happen is it has to power down so that all of the waste that's in there can start to cool down so that it can be moved to a safer place. And anything is safer right now than the pool that it's in at the Columbia Generating Station. So, we have hardened on-site storage casks. That's better than where they are now. So anything is better.
Well, look, I think what we need to do is get people to call their public utility companies and ask them to pull their votes from the Columbia Generating Station and tell them that we don't want to use nuclear power at all, that we want to move away from that and into solar. And we can remind them, I think it's a good idea to remind them about the Clark County thing. I mean, and people can contact you at info@radcast.org if they're in the Northwest and want to get involved, or contact you on Facebook at No Nukes Northwest. We have a few minutes left, and this has been a great interview. I really want to thank you for being so clear. I'd like to have you back again so we can keep pounding this information home, because this is not an easy process for us to wrap our brains around. I know for myself, I forget a lot of the information. I kind of get the general feeling, and then I forget the details. So I think it's important for us to keep talking about it. But in the few minutes we have left, can you tell me a little bit more about this whistleblower, Walt Tamosaitis, you said his name was? We have about 2 minutes. Do you think you could share a little bit about him and how that came about?
Yeah, Walt is a nuclear engineer. Well, not anymore because he can retire now. But he worked at URS, which is one of the contractors next to Bechtel up in Hanford. And he was an upper manager at URS for the Hanford cleanup. And one of the things that he noticed years ago is that that whole conglomeration of if you have nuclear waste mixed with unknowables, but you know that those unknowables are in there, let's just call it X. And then you want to move that nuclear waste and X into a smaller pipe into a pretreatment plant, which has a known bad design. What happens during the transfer? So he went to all of the right people to tell them, we can't do this because it's going to risk a hydrogen explosion and kill everybody, and blow up all of Hanford. I mean, that's how big his discovery was.
And he came
So
out and talked about it.
He didn't come out at first. He talked within. He did all the proper things because he was upper management over there. He had a great job. I mean, he was, and he was one person who actually understood that you can't lie about this stuff. This stuff will kill people. And he didn't have the disease that I was talking about, I mean,
Yeah.
he kind of did in a way, in the
He's
sense
somewhat
that he
conscious.
was working at, in nuclear engineering, right? I mean, I think that's pretty insane. But anyway, he's a good human being, and he cared. And so when URS wouldn't go anywhere with this, they put him in the dungeon. He
Wow.
called it the dungeon. It was their basement. He had
Yeah,
like no
that's
windows.
fantastic.
Yeah, he couldn't do any of his work. I mean, this guy was a very, very smart man. And so they kept him in the dungeon for 2 years. At that time, I met him when I was organizing A15, which is the thing you talked about when Helen came. And so Walt taught me what I know about Hanford. He was my Hanford teacher.
Well,
And
that is great. I'd really like to reach out to you again. We have about 15 seconds left. I really want to thank you for being here and being so clear and articulate, and I really look forward to you coming back.
you bet, and thank you.
Okay, well.